Hi, this is Bill Radke, and you're listening to Weekend America's MP3 podcast, and there's nothing wrong with that. But did you know there's a way to hear all of Weekend America, plus see pictures, videos, skip forward and backward through stories with better sound quality? It's the Weekend America Enhanced Podcast. And to subscribe, search for Weekend America in iTunes or go to our website and click on Enhanced Podcast.
Coming up on Weekend America.
This weekend, the presidential candidates court voters in Texas and Ohio.
Do you have any interest in Obama?
What was that?
Do you have any interest in Barack Obama?
What was that?
Or Barack Obama? Oh, you don't know who he is?
I don't know.
Later, we'll meet some true undecideds. I'm Desiree Cooper.
And I'm Bill Radke. Also this hour, a couple tries to bridge a communication gap with their daughter.
I think about all the things that she has tried to tell us over the years that we're just lost. It's a little bit like having a foreign exchange student in the house.
Find out what she has to teach them. And later, is that a mirage or a colorful city on the Minnesota ice?
Okay, so you see up there in the distance, that's the art shanties.
They look like colorful shacks, multicolored shacks.
It's like a little village.
Now that's what I call an artsy town on Weekend America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles.
And I'm Desiree Cooper in the Twin Cities. Saturday Night Live spends all of its time poking fun of the candidates during the political campaign season. What could be funnier than people putting their hearts and fortunes on the line to get your vote? They've skewered Hillary for years, and this hour we'll ask that hard question. What? Isn't Obama good enough for a laugh? What are you doing this weekend?
Well, this weekend I'm going to be doing some chores around the house. I have to build a cat scratch post.
I think this weekend we're going to the Empire State Building.
Comic books, videos, movies.
I'm visiting my friends.
This weekend we're going to go see a gymnastic meet.
Or maybe going to a couple parties, but definitely not buying anything because I have no money. I'll be working this weekend, too, to get money to buy things in future weekends.
I will be watching some soccer on Saturday morning.
We're going to go visit relatives. And then I think we're going to watch the Academy Awards.
There will be blood this weekend.
Those voices came from Minneapolis, New York, and Concord, New Hampshire.
This is the radio show that captures this weekend in America. Senators Clinton and Obama are campaigning in Ohio this weekend ahead of the March 4th Democratic primaries. Voter turnout has been at an all-time high this year. This campaign is riveting even to people who can't legally vote in it. There are 25 million foreign-born people in this country, green card holders, refugees, illegal immigrants, 8% of our population who have no say in the political process. Reporter Mari Saito is at public radio station WCPN in Cleveland. She wanted to know how these immigrants are relating to this election.
The new CNN poll conducted by the Opinion Research Corporation shows the Democratic race in Texas just about tied.
These days, the TV in Juba, a Somalian restaurant, is always tuned to the cable news networks. East African taxi drivers come over from nearby Cleveland Hopkins Airport to this clean but small hole in the wall for their dinner of stew and bread and to catch up on the news. Ibrahim Mohammed sits in a folding chair and controls the remote. He flips between CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC, looking for anything on the presidential primary.
But I think it's going to get crazy, but it's going to be very close.
Mohammed is an immigrant from Somalia, and though he can't vote, he's rooting for his candidate, Democratic Illinois Senator Barack Obama.
It would be nice if I can vote, but I don't know, you guys are going to vote, so...
Mohammed points to a few men in the restaurant who will vote in the primary election, like Julius Kimeni. On March 4th, Kimeni will vote for the first time, and like the other diners, he supports Obama, but not just because Obama's father was Kenyan. Kimeni says he believes Obama's foreign policy efforts will include more outreach to Africa.
When a person vying for the presidency of the United States saying that it is not just enough to hold on to the friends that we currently have, we need more friends. I mean, that excites me a lot.
Opposition comes from the lone woman in the restaurant. Dressed in a colorful batik and head covering, Rukia Abdi shouts out from the kitchen.
Hillary Clinton. She woman.
Vote for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yes?
Because she's a woman. That's what she said.
Are you registered to vote? Oh, yes. Is she
registered to vote?
Abdi shakes her head no. The refugee is still waiting for her papers to be processed. Only 3.5% of Ohioans are foreign-born. It's a small sliver of the population here. But if the Democratic primary is really tight, immigrants could play a role. By far the largest group here are Latinos, and traditionally they've been all over the map politically, says local pastor Jesus Laboy.
Immigrants from Latin America are all from different countries, so they're all independent, and we have always had a difficult time uniting these people to do anything. And the immigration issue was the one issue that really managed to put them all together.
Laboy is among those who are trying to encourage immigrants to register to vote. Ohio State University political scientist Paul Beck says anti-immigrant rhetoric may generate more turnout this time.
It makes them sometimes targets, even if they are here legally and are American citizens. And it really, I think, shows kind of an ugly side of intolerance that they very much perceive and are very sensitive to. And I think it's been very damaging and will continue to be very damaging, largely to Republicans.
Elim Church on Cleveland's west side is packed every Sunday. The 300-strong congregation is made up of Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, and immigrants from other parts of Latin America. I catch people as they stream out of the church service. Voters are interested in everyone, Obama, Clinton, and Republican John McCain. But I'm surprised at how little some of them know.
Are you watching the primary and the election now?
No, I'm not.
And have you voted before?
No, not yet.
Not yet? Are you going to vote this year?
I'll try.
You'll try?
Yeah.
Do you have any interest in Obama?
What was that?
Do you have any interest in Barack Obama?
What was that?
Or Barack Obama? Oh, you don't know who he is?
No, I don't know.
All right.
This political naivete doesn't surprise 33-year-old Fabrizio. The engineer from Ecuador is here illegally, so he asks that I not use his real name. Last year, the associate pastor from his church was deported. His wife and young kids have legal status, so they stayed behind in Ohio. The incident brought the political wranglings in Washington directly into this community. And that's why, Fabrizio says, those who can vote should.
Le estaba diciendo que la comunidad hispana no se envuelve en las elecciones políticas de este país. No les importa o piensan porque no somos minoría.
Fabrizio says he thinks the Hispanic community isn't that interested in U.S. politicians and that no one seems to pay attention. But this year, Latinos must vote, he says, if they want to help the community.
What is it like to watch an important election like this happen, but not vote?
¿Cómo se siente estar como espectador y no poder votar?
Frustrante.
It is frustrating.
So Fabrizio says he's watching the news carefully and trying to share what he learns with friends who can vote. If he could vote, he'd go for Republican candidate John McCain. In Cleveland, I'm Mari Saito for Weekend America.
Senator John McCain is campaigning in Indiana today. Senator Clinton is in Ohio with Senator Obama in Texas. And then on Sunday, those two will switch places.
Yeah, but Clinton's going to make a detour that Obama is not going to be making. And that's been a subject of controversy.
Right. The annual forum called the State of the Black Union is this weekend in New Orleans. This is an event that brings together African-American leadership, religious leaders, executives, intellectuals, politicians. Unlike Senator Clinton, Senator Obama has declined to attend.
Well, his wife, Michelle, has agreed to attend, but that set off a debate about whether Obama should be out campaigning or there in New Orleans addressing the black community.
Right. And it's been interesting how, as we've discussed, these days, everyone's a pundit because people have so much access to polls and commentary that there's just been a raging discussion about this weekend's event and perhaps not the last time this will come up. You're listening to Weekend America.
Today, we welcome WSTK in Wrangell, Alaska, to the Weekend America family. Wrangell is one of the oldest non-native settlements in Alaska. It dates back to the 1800s when the Russians settled it. It's a city of about 2,000 on an island in the Alaskan Panhandle. It's mostly a logging and fishing town, although it's definitely open to tourists. Well, this weekend, the one movie theater that's in Wrangell is showing two features for the first time, the latest Rambo movie and The Bucket List. Beth Comstock has lived in Wrangell for about 30 years. And in addition to being a mother of nine kids, yes, nine, Beth also works at the local paper. She's a tour guide and she works at the visitor center. And I called her up to get a little flavor of the town.
We've got the Pacific Ocean on one side of us and gorgeous green mountains on the other side because we are smack dab in the Tongass National Forest, which actually is a rainforest. So it's lush and gorgeous and wonderful here.
How do people get around every weekend? Because you guys are actually on an island?
We are on an island, but we have paved roads, and so we've all got our cars. We have one car and two or three boats. We have the river that's right off of us, which the Stikine River is the fastest flowing navigable river in North America, which is our playground. There are two natural hot springs, or a natural hot springs up the Stikine River. So that's a community recreational event.
What's your favorite spot in Wrangell?
My favorite spot is out on our sailboat with all of our kids around us having great fun time on the water.
How much time do you get to be on the water?
Very rarely are we able to get all of the kids together. We have nine kids, so but we try very hard during the summer to make it at least once a weekend, if not, you know, 3 or 4 days out of the week that we're spending a couple hours out there.
What's going on in Wrangell right now? What's the big news?
During this time of the year, we are very much into supporting our high school basketball team. And this weekend is our big, the Stikine Sportsmen's Association is having their big dinner this weekend. And it's nothing but wild food, you know, such as venison and fish. And they've actually had some seal meat one year and some alligator one time. And
I understand that there's also an award this weekend. Much of America is going to be looking toward the Oscars, but you guys are going to...
We get the Moldy Moose Award, yep. And that's for whoever's embarrassed themselves the most out in an outdoor recreation activity.
Is it actually a moldy moose horn?
I think there's moose horns attached to a toilet seat is what I've heard.
So this weekend you've got this big dinner with the moose horns and basketball games. But what's a typical weekend like in Wrangell?
Well, Saturday morning, the big rush is you've got to get to the grocery store before they run out of milk. Because both grocery stores run out of milk by about 11 o'clock in the morning. And then you can leave it there, and they'll deliver it to your house later on. And then you've got to go do the rummage sale circuit, because that's the social event of Saturday morning.
Now, I have a question about the milk. Why don't they just order more milk so that people don't have to scramble for it, if it's happening every weekend like that?
I would imagine in the 30 years I've lived here, it's always happened. It's just no matter how much milk, it's Wrangell's mindset that got to get milk. We know they're going to run out.
Maybe they should get the Moldy Moose Horn Award for... not being able to supply enough milk.
That's right.
Well, Beth, I want to thank you for joining us at Weekend America.
Well, it was great to talk to you.
That was Beth Comstock, a 30-year resident of Wrangell, Alaska. You can see photos of the town and just how beautiful it is. Just go to our website at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
This weekend, a new Cuban president, the risk of nighttime lights, and the blackest thing there is. Good news, bad news, or no news, next on Weekend America. Thank you. You're listening to Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke. What's happening in America this weekend is hindsight, as we look back now over the events of the week gone by and tag them as good news, bad news, or no news. On our panel today, Pulitzer Prize-winning foreign affairs writer Samantha Power. Welcome, Samantha.
Good to be here.
Hollywood writer, producer type, John Ridley. Hi, John.
Hey, Bill.
And writer, comedian, wag, Dana Gould. Hey, Dana.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Our first topic, Cuba is choosing a new president this weekend. Is the resignation of 81-year-old Fidel Castro good news, bad news, or no news?
Good news. Castro has both been a symbol of so many things that have distorted American foreign policy over the years. And he, for all of the reification of him on the left in this country and his alleged great support for social and economic rights and so forth and schools and health, the Cubans have been living in not the circumstances they deserve to be living in. So this is an opening. It's a chance. The fact that it's his brother who'll take over and who'll keep the legacy is unfortunate, but at least it gives us a chance to open things up and actually allow remittances and travel and things that give us a chance to move the tectonic plates in this frozen relationship.
Good news. Others?
I was going to say something pithy about his tracksuit, but I'm just going to shut up.
Okay.
I also think it's good news. And I also think that the fact that he is just passing the presidency on to another member of his family shows that Cubans are a lot more like Americans than we think.
Than we think, yeah.
And hopefully Raul's grip on power will not be as tenacious or as long-lasting as Fidel's, and that people in Cuba can have the benefits of a modern society that they should have.
Well, a lot of analysts say this is no news because Castro's acolytes think like he does, including his 76-year-old kid brother.
I think the writing's on the wall for Raul. I think Raul gets it. You got to wise up at some point. You know, communism's not exactly catching fire anymore. Mm. It's gone the way of tail fins and hula hoops.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to imagine this guy's going to be a little savvier.
If we not flooded Cuba with our products and our trade and our culture, would that not be the worst possible thing for that government?
The Starbucksification of an otherwise simple and pleasant place to visit?
I've been to China twice in the past 4 years, and marked difference in the two trips.
That's what a lot of Cuban Americans are waiting for, the chance to actually go in that way, now, unlike the Bay of Pigs way of going in. But it could be equally disastrous, as you say, as the Bay of Pigs. I think one of the interesting things about this moment is that Raul, while a Castro, and yes, while a 76-year-old kid brother, is he's not sacred in the way that Fidel was. There are a lot of people who kind of rally around the big man, you know, the guy who brought and shepherded in independence, who stood up to the West. Raul doesn't have any of that street cred. So the question is, can you kind of calibrate an opening where it doesn't either, you know, freeze things as it is right now, which isn't working either for the United States or for Cuba, but also doesn't go in that direction that you're suggesting, where it just becomes an economic free-for-all where the Cuban people pay the price. It's just pure exploitation by outside forces. Somehow we got to create a conversation to where there's something in between that. Those are two very bad options.
Okay, our next topic. Researchers say women who live in neighborhoods with lots of nighttime illumination are more likely to get breast cancer. The Israeli researchers overlaid satellite images of the Earth onto cancer registries, and their findings suggest that too much light at night interferes with the body's production of a tumor-suppressing hormone. Is this good news, bad news, or no news?
That we're being watched by the Israelis? I don't want to pick sides, but that's the most frightening part of that whole conversation.
Yeah, hard to know what's the lights, what's the smog, what's the microwave, what's the cell phone. I mean, places where you have lots of lights at night, you have lots of other things going on at night, too. Mm. So, and by day, for that matter. So I don't know. It seems correlative and not consequential, to use a fancy way of...
Samantha did my joke.
Oh? Cordial of not cognitive.
The good news argument here is that this would be a cancer cause we can actually do something about. Turn out the lights, live more naturally with the sun, get some sleep. We can do this.
But who's going to actually do that? I mean, we're not turning off the lights. We're not shutting off our iPods. We're not getting out of our cars. It ain't going to happen. So I think we're better off trying to find a cure, if this were true, big fat if, an actual cure.
Okay.
Through good science, as the president would say.
Our next topic. Researchers in New York say they've created a paper-thin material that absorbs 99.955% of the light that hits it, making it by far the darkest substance ever made. look very, very closely and tell me whether this is good news, bad news, or no news.
This is great news.
Great?
Yeah. It's great news if, right now it's called Blacker Than Black.
Mm-hmm.
It's great news if it's developed as a weapon and we continue to call it Blacker Than Black. Because when the president says to some rogue nation or some bad actor, we're going to get some Blacker Than Black on you, quite frankly, we don't have to do one thing more.
Samantha?
I'm Irish by birth and freckled and fair-skinned. And if this allows me to go out to the ball game in the heat of the summer and potentially protect the back of my neck, maybe that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is bad news for me because a year ago I went to a celebrity auction. And I bought funk superstar Bootsy Collins' old Afro pick, which up until that time was the blackest substance known to man.
That's right. At that time it was.
Yeah. And now
so
it
is. So it's been devalued.
But you can still sell it on eBay, right? It just becomes kind of blacker than black.
The Pentagon is interested in this super black material as a cloaking device.
What a shock.
So, bad news for the enemies of the U.S. of A?
No.
By the way, you know, when the Eggo Corporation started making mini waffles, the Pentagon was interested in the military applications of it. That's a constant subheadline to anything.
Yes. Will this take out our enemies at a distance or just taste yummy and delicious? How about we spend like billions of dollars inventing a way to avoid going to war?
Mm.
How about that? That's my ultra liberal moment for the day.
Did you not think it was cool to read about invisibility and bending light around objects and just how
that's
cool
the other
science
part
is?
Of it. Is the blacker than black to me is not interesting because basically it's already dark.
Right.
But along that article with the bending of light, where you can actually be in the light and be invisible,
yes,
that's cool.
Okay.
That's
so you're
really
going to
help
the...
me in Vegas a lot.
The Air on Chairs have recently introduced a new color called True Black.
Yeah.
Who went into their boss's office and pitched that? I've got the new color. Black.
True Black is the new black.
Yeah. Blacker Than Black is the new black.
Remember Real Coke?
Yep.
Yes. True Black is just the latest Real Coke.
Yes. Exactly.
So people are going to go back and say, you know, I liked black the way it was.
Yeah, that's true. Classic black. Okay, that's the news this week. Panel, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Samantha Power won the Pulitzer for her book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide. Her latest is called Chasing the Flame, Sergio Vieira de Mello and the Fight to Save the World. John Ridley's latest book is The American Way, a graphic novel about a government-created team of superheroes. And he writes an NPR blog called Visible Man. Writer-comedian Dana Gould's credits include The Simpsons, and he's performing this weekend, tonight at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Los Angeles. So tell us how the week broke for you into good news, bad news, or no news. You can vote when you spend time with us at our website, weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This program is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, and KPCC Los Angeles.
Coming up, a little girl's brain disorder almost breaks her parents' marriage. Raising a child who cannot speak, just ahead on Weekend America. It's Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper. Saturday Night Live returns this weekend after the writer's strike. The host tonight is Tina Fey, musical guest Carrie Underwood. But who's going to do Barack Obama? This week, SNL was auditioning people to impersonate the senator, and executive producer Lorne Michaels said it's not easy because, quote, finding a way to get people to laugh at him is complicated right now. He's truly a heroic figure. Well, in Obama's hometown of Chicago, the Second City comedy troupe has been making fun of him for years in a show called Between Barack and a Hard Place. Cast members Ithamar Enriquez and Amber Ruffin are with us now. Welcome to Weekend America.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hello.
What's funny about Barack Obama?
It might not be that Barack Obama is a hilarious figure. It might be what we think of him has become kind of outlandish.
I think our jobs as satirists, comedians, is even if you find something that is perfect like that, you still have to find at least one thing, one little nugget that you can exaggerate and make fun of. And it's a challenge, but I think that's part of it. It's part of the job.
Let's hear some of your show.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama is.
Barack Obama is.
Barack Obama is.
Barack Obama is me. Hello, African Americans. I am Barack Obama. And I hope for the sake of Americans of every color that I will become your next president. Because as a minority, I believe that I can best understand and speak to the widest range of citizens of our great country.
Hello, white male Americans. I am Barack Obama, and I hope to become your next president. Let's face it, at heart, I am a white man. After all, my mother was from Kansas, and that's as white as it gets.
Hello, American women. I am Barack Obama, and I hope for the sake of you, your families, your careers, and your reproductive rights that I will become your next president. I can sympathize with your daily struggles. After all, my mother was a woman.
That's the Second City comedy troupe in Chicago taking off in the old I Am an American spots. You guys sound like you're managing it. What did you think of Lorne Michaels' take that Obama is too heroic to be funny?
Maybe who he is isn't necessarily funny, but I honestly believe that sooner or later something's going to come out. I mean, he did coke for Pete's sake. You can always go there.
Yeah.
Do you go there in your show?
There was a scene where that was briefly mentioned by someone playing Hillary Clinton, and then we kind of come back with, but he's still really perfect, so we'll let that slide by, which, you know, people do, and that's fine, and that's another aspect that we find funny, you know. You know, there's little things that people are just like, well, that's okay. He's still really perfect. And no matter what you say, he's my dreamboat. You know, yeah. he's gonna do just fine.
Right. They call that Teflon, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. I believe so.
How much is the funny limited by political correctness because of his race, do you think?
I think that you get some permission to make fun of the race aspect when one of your cast members is black and, you know, another is gay and another is Hispanic. I mean, it kind of gives you permission to say whatever you want.
So, Amber and Ithamar, leaving aside your personal politics, purely as comedians, who are you rooting for in this election?
Barack Obama.
Why?
Because we've just had years and years of making fun of someone in a terrible way. You know, it feels easy and done. And, you know, let's do something new.
I think I would take a different stance. I understand what Amber's saying, but for me as a professional, if McCain or Hillary takes it, it would definitely give us a good running start of finding things to make fun of. But the challenge is also very enticing of trying to come up with something for someone who's, you know, looked upon as being very perfect and heroic to find ways to satirize. You know, that's just our challenges as
it's
comedians.
It's a challenge.
It is. Exactly.
Amber and Ithamar, thank you, and good luck on stage tonight.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Amber Ruffin and Ithamar Enriquez perform tonight at Second City in Chicago. The show tonight is called Between Barack and a New Show.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles.
And I'm Desiree Cooper in the Twin Cities. Now, I'm going to ask you to visualize this for me. If you go to our website, weekendamerica.org, and look over on the left side, you'll see a little box. It's called America's Weekend. You click on that, and you'll get an up-to-the-minute feed of just about everything that America was up to last weekend.
Well, everything America admits to and posts to the photo-sharing website Flickr. Like right now, we have a portrait of vegan chocolates, a seaplane, and much NBA basketball.
We tracked down the people who took some of our favorite photos last week and asked them for the backstory. Here's what they shared.
Hi, my name is Latham Jenkins, and I live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. In this picture, we've begun the foundation for our igloo. The wintertime in Wyoming, our weekends are filled with looking for things to do, and creating a project like building an igloo is something that the kids really look forward to. You know, a three-year-old can be really helpful in the process. He's packed down all the snow that went into making these blocks, and then additionally, he's most excited about taking the snow knife and cutting the entryway into the igloo.
Hi, I'm Carrie Ann Castillo, and I'm from the Central Valley of California. We have a pond in our backyard, and it attracts a lot of birds bathing, and the cats just crowd around the windows watching them, and it's kind of like bird porn for them. In this shot, Zorro, one of my cats, is on the kitchen counter stalking a dove on the fence outside. Zorro gets very excited when he sees the birds outside, so he was going a little nuts looking through the window, and his teeth start chattering, and he gets a little butt wiggle.
Hello, my name is Kelly Hogaboom, and I live in Hoquiam, Washington. In this photo, you see my son, Nels, with his head in his hands on a picnic table next to my husband's cup of tea. We'd gone out picnicking, and he wanted the top cookie in an identical stack of five, and at this moment the picture's taken, he believes one of us ate the top cookie. He's just devastated and just weeping on the table. In the moment that my son started to make this fuss, my husband likes to capture our kids in these candid kind of positions, and so he just snapped the picture right at that second. He was sad for about 15 seconds before we got him his correct cookie and we moved on and had a great lunch.
Check pictures of Latham's igloo, bird porn, and Kelly's very, very, very sad son when you go to our website at weekendamerica.org. And check out America's Weekend via Flickr.
This weekend, Robert Rummel Hudson is confessing some uncomfortable truths to a crowd of strangers at a Barnes & Noble in Dallas. Robert's new book, Skylar's Monster, chronicles his struggle to raise his daughter, Skylar, who has a rare brain disorder that makes it impossible for her to speak. Weekend America's Michael May reports that Robert is on a mission to share the truth about raising a child with a disability.
Just because 8-year-old Skylar Rummel Hudson can't speak doesn't mean she doesn't have something to say. That's clear immediately, just from the way she's dressed on this rainy Saturday. Bright bottle red hair, pink camouflage headscarf, flower print t-shirt pulled over a long-sleeved black shirt. She's got attitude to spare, and as soon as I walk in the door, she grabs my microphone and starts chattering away. Skylar has polymicrogyria. It's a rare genetic brain disorder that makes it impossible for her to form hard consonants. So she sounds about the same as she did when she was 2 years old. And the disorder also affects her motor coordination, making writing and sign language difficult. She uses an electronic device to form sentences.
Guitar. What do I put on then? Do we put a period, exclamation point?
Exclamation point, I want to play my pink guitar.
Communication is still a constant struggle. She starts playing with her collection of toy mermaids, monsters, and dinosaurs, and then turns to her parents, Robert and Julie.
Green?
Skylar, you've got us baffled. We have no idea what you're telling us.
Yeah. What does that mean, babe?
Skylar, it's okay.
I think about all the things that she has tried to tell us over the years that that are just lost. It's a little bit like having a foreign exchange student in the house who speaks a little English, but not enough to get the big stuff across.
When Skylar was born, Robert started blogging about his newborn daughter. At that time, everything appeared normal.
So for a long time, I was writing about Skylar and writing about Skylar as a baby. And it was all this very typical befuddled dad, I don't know what I'm doing, but let's figure this out kind of writing.
Robert wrote about changing diapers, losing sleep, new dad stuff. But when Skylar was 1.5, it became obvious that she wasn't developing the ability to speak.
As Skylar's issues started to become more apparent and we started to realize that there was a problem, suddenly there was a sort of urgency to my writing.
Robert changed the blog's name from Citizen Rob to Skylar's Monster. And more people started following Robert and Julie's quest to find out what was wrong with their daughter. Doctors spent weeks testing Skylar's hearing. It was fine. Then a team of doctors at Yale diagnosed Skylar with autism, but that didn't seem to fit either. Robert says the stress and confusion started to weigh on his relationship with Julie.
We were both so caught up in our fear that I think it was almost like we resented each other for being a part of that. You know, we wanted someone to give us answers and someone who would sympathize, and instead we just had, you know, this other person in the house who was always, you know, just as grumpy as we were and just as afraid as we were.
He asked Skylar to go into the next room to play. And then Robert tells me just how bad it got. He and Julie started to pull away from each other. They both had affairs. And as a father, he felt like he was failing his daughter. He wanted to fix her.
And there was a period where I considered suicide, and it made perfect sense at the time. This idea that Skylar would be better off with a father who, you know, this memory of a father that she could turn into, you know, whoever she needed him to be, as opposed to the reality of me, which was this, you know, lost, cheating, sad father who was no help at all to her.
Skylar, do you need something? We're still talking. What do you need? You're going to have to wait a little bit. Can you do that? Can I get a kiss?
You're a good girl. Can you wait just a little bit longer? We're talking big, serious, sad grown-up stuff, and you don't want anything to do with it.
But Skylar had everything to do with pulling Robert back from the brink. It all came to a head when his wife, Julie, just got fed up.
She actually moved out for a little over a week. But when she moved out, she left Skylar with me.
I needed to get myself together because I'm falling apart. I'm crying at work. I'm crying in the car. And I had to say, Julie, you know, you got to regroup. It was a moment of clarity.
That week was actually one of the best weeks of my life, only because, not because Julie wasn't there, but because I was able to see that you know, sort of reconnect to this purpose that no matter how bad things were, there was Skylar, and Skylar needed to be fed, and Skylar needed to be taken care of. And I realized that, you know, I can do this.
And I came back and I thought, you know, it could be so much worse. I just said to myself, okay, we're gonna deal with it. We're going to work through it, and we're going to do it for Skylar because she needs both of us.
Robert decided to share these painful moments on his blog in hopes of making people in similar situations feel less alone, like he had. And Robert got something back, something even more tangible. Insurance wouldn't cover the cost of Skylar's speech device, so Robert added a fundraising page on his site. In just over a month, they raised $10,000 to pay for it. Now communication has gotten easier, not just with Skylar, but between Robert and his wife.
You know, one of the standard pieces of relationship advice is that staying together for the kids is a bad idea. I'm not sure that that's entirely true, at least not initially, because I think that was initially why Julie and I stayed together. We have this partnership with Skylar kind of at its core. It's become really strong.
And with that, Robert and Julie head into Skylar's room to play with her monster. It's purple and stuffed with cotton. In Dallas, I'm Michael May for Weekend America.
Robert Rummel Hudson is the father of 8-year-old Skylar, and he is the author of Skylar's Monster, A Father's Journey with His Wordless Daughter.
You know, Bill, just listening to Robert talk about suicide and divorce just reminds you of how thin support systems really are for parents with children who have disabilities. Last summer, the National Autism Association launched what was called Families First. They still have it. It's helping with marriage counseling expenses for parents who have children with autism.
And they say that that can really contribute to divorce.
Right. And yet it seems all disabilities don't have the same effect. Vanderbilt just did a study that indicates the divorce rate is actually lower than average for parents of children with Down syndrome. And they are speculating that maybe that's partly because these parents tend to be older and more educated and were married before they had children. Robert Rummel Hudson continues his book tour this weekend. You can read his blog, Fighting Monsters with Rubber Swords, when you spend time with us at our website. That's weekendamerica.org.
The Oscars are this weekend, and the revelers are going to be soggy on that red carpet. It's supposed to be in the high 50s, but rainy in Hollywood on Sunday. For more weather, here's Week in America's John Moe.
What rhymes with cod? Okay, that's an easy one. How about red snapper or mud shark? If you have answers, head to Astoria, Oregon for the annual Fisher Poets Gathering. Clouds and 48 as folks from the fishing industry get together to read poems and read stories and socialize. The least popular poem is expected to once again be There Once Was a Squid from Nantucket. Cloudy in Topeka and 43 degrees, and eerie silence. The Kansas Silent Film Festival coincides with the anniversary of the end of World War I. A variety of movies are scheduled to be shown, plus live bands. Weirdly, they're all heavy metal bands. I'm kidding, they're Wurlitzer players. My favorite line from a silent movie is, you want to hear it again? It's fun to walk the dog. Folks in Alaska agree, but remember, everything's bigger in Alaska. Today is the final day of Yukon Quest, and while it sounds a bit like a Klondike video game, it's a sled dog race. Snow and 9 degrees as the mushers complete a 1,000-mile journey from Whitehorse to Fairbanks. And as soon as the dogs get inside, they just want to go for another walk again. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
Ever dream of a house on a lake? Well, come to Minnesota this winter and visit a tiny town that walks on water. Up next on Weekend America.
Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Online at calvert.com.
From American Public Media, you're listening to Week in America. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. Minnesota winters can be harsh, especially if you're from Los Angeles, like our producer Angela Kim. She moved to Minnesota last year, and she spent the winter hibernating. But then she heard about the Art Shanties Project on Medicine Lake. It's a temporary artist village built on Frozen Lake every January. And it started with just one little shack in 2004, and now it's grown to about 20 huts. Last weekend, longtime Minnesota resident Sandin Totten pulled Angela out of her cave and onto the ice.
Okay, you have your gloves?
Yeah, so you got your scarf?
Yeah, I got my scarf.
You got your hat?
And I have my windproof fleece.
Did you put on long underwear?
No, I have knee-high wool socks, though.
Ooh,
is that going to work?
Well, we'll see. So there definitely is a little bit of a breeze.
I can feel it. I don't want to breathe. It hurts my lungs. My fingertips are cold.
Okay, so you see up there in the distance, that's the art shanties.
They look like colorful shacks, like multicolored shacks.
It's like a little village. I see right now about 20 little shacks.
Let's go into a shack. My nose is running.
Okay, we'll
It's very cold.
Hello?
Hello.
How's it going?
Good, how's it going with you?
Pretty good. So, where are we?
I'm Peter Hoken Thompson, and this is the Auto Ethnographic Guide Service HQ.
So this is sort of the headquarters to this little shanty village?
It's kind of the information administrative center, yes.
So we just got here.
This is my first time here, actually. I've only been here for a year.
Okay, and a little bit of background information. Angela Kim is from Los Angeles, a place where not only do they not have art shanties, they don't actually even have winters. So all of this is new to her.
We kind of have winters. It gets a little cold.
Like sweater weather, maybe. Hoodie weather.
Yeah.
I don't think that counts.
So I'm kind of curious, like, for a newbie like me who has never come to something like this, what do you suggest that I see?
Every single shanty in the art shanty village.
Okay, Angela, we're going back out.
Okay, here we go. Thank you.
My name is Caleb Peterson. I'm one of the co-operators of the Postal Shanty out here on Medicine Lake, the Art Shanties Project. So this is it. We serve as both recipient and sender of mail from out here on the ice.
Why do you think the Postal Shanty is necessary here? Like, you can probably go to a post office close by, but...
I think it's an extension of the communal feeling you have out here on the ice. This is a community of like-minded individuals, not unlike those who have for several years here in the state of Minnesota gone out onto the ice fishing, actually, for fish. This is sort of a artistic expression of that sense of community, and any community needs a communication center and a postal office.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks. All right, let's go to... What's next? Hi.
Hi.
Is this your first time in the...
This is my first time at the art project.
So far, what have you seen? Tell me some of the stuff that you've seen.
Well, there's a large rocking robot that you can climb into. There's a large dark house that has a little pinhole in it. And when your eyes adapt to the dark, you can actually see an outline of the shore. It's sort of, I guess, one of those camera obscura things. Then there's a knitting house somewhere, which I need to see because my wife knits. I think I might wander back over there and see what that's like.
Oh my god, I almost fell. Here I go, I'm okay now.
Okay, Angela.
Let's go to that one.
That's the Shanty of Misfit Toys.
Do you want me to explain what this shanty looks like?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Shanty of Misfit Toys has clear plastic walls, and then within the walls are stuffed about 1,000 stuffed animals. So the animals act as insulation. I'm not quite sure what makes them misfits. Maybe they're last year's models, or there's something a little bit off, like the little elephant. Maybe the eyeballs are a little bit tilted, so they don't look exactly right. And then there's a monkey that has a really weird screech to it. We call it the anxiety-producing monkey. See, that doesn't sound very comforting. I'm Marlene Cox. This is our second year doing the Shanty of Misfit Toys. I think the Art Shanty Projects is a really great way to look forward to the winter, which I never thought I would do, because it just forces you to be outside and really, you know, just embrace winter and all that it has to offer.
I'm glad I came out here, though.
Why's that?
It shows that there's life outside in winter, because every time I look out my window, I don't see people on my sidewalks. I don't see people on the streets in downtown St. Paul.
Maybe they're all at the art shanties, Angela.
Maybe. I have to say, people were really friendly out here. I was like, everyone talking to you.
Here it's sort of like everyone has this thing in common, is, you know, that they're doing this crazy thing of hanging out on a lake.
And that also the commonality of being cold together. Yeah.
That's like the unifying thing about Minnesota. We can always talk about how cold we are. No, but seriously, it's cold.
It is.
A little follow-up. Just as Angela was finishing the story, she took one for the team. She slipped on the ice and broke two bones in her right leg.
Yeah, so sorry about that. This weekend, Angela's mom is with her. She's in town while Angela's convalescing on the couch, making her way through her box set of Frankie and Annette movies, she told us. She started out with Muscle Beach Party, and she'll watch any movie that does not have ice in it. Well, that's it for this hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. Our program is produced with Ben Adair, Julia Barton, who, by the way, this morning gave birth to a 9-pound, 15-ounce boy. Woo-hoo! Congratulations, Julia. Also, Rob Byers, Neely Allel, Millie Jefferson, Sam Keenan, Ia Kobe, Michael Rayfield, Susie Lechtenberg, and Tim Bamba.
Also, Johnny Vince Evans, Chrissy Clark, Phyllis Owens, Sandon Totten, Brendan Newnham, who will be working on Sunday but then going to an Oscar party, Angela Kim, hope you get better, Jim Gates, John Moe, and Mark Sanchez.
Our theme music was created by Galactic. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney. Jim Russell created the program, and I hope you'll get a free enhanced podcast of the show. You get the images, photos, links, chapters, so you can listen easily. Great quality. It's all at weekendamerica.org. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. And while you're at the website, don't forget to check out our little-known Black History Facts. Hey, get out there and enjoy your weekend.
This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
This is Bill Radke, host of Weekend America. The weekends are for courage.
Yeah, when you come in here, you see a whole bunch of people in there. Hey, they go Poogie. They go Mikey. You know, I ain't expect to see him here. It make you kind of feel like, okay, well, if they're going to do it, then I can do it.
Conquering errands, braving to-do lists, listening to the most memorable stories and ideas every Saturday. Weekend America. Join us.